Good afternoon, KCTA. This is Gracie. I am the program director here at KCTA. And this week for the Community Spotlight, I'm interviewing Diana Booth from CASA and Samantha. And they're here to tell us more about CASA, what it is, requirements to be a CASA, and a little bit more about their upcoming event they have. So hello, ladies.
Hi, how are you?
Hello, thank you for having us.
Oh, thanks for coming. I'm so excited to have you here.
We're glad to be here.
Aw, y'all are great ladies, what you do for the community, and I mean, this is such an important organization. I'm really happy to help any way I can with this, so I'm really happy you're here. Well, first, I guess, can you just tell our listeners a little bit more about what is CASA?
Well, CASA, it stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocates. These are volunteers that are from our community who have taken the time to actually work with the children that are in the foster care. They are directly appointed by the judge to advocate for the best interest of abused and neglected children that find themselves in foster care because of the abuse and the neglect that they've endured by the very individual that was supposed to be caring for them and taking good care of them. Our volunteers are individuals who are just compassionate. They're self-motivated, they're individuals from the community, and they come from all walks of lives. And we really, really are in need of volunteers. There's so many children in the foster care system right now. In Nueces County alone, we had about 700 children that were in the foster care system in 2014 who needed someone to speak up for them. And we only had enough to speak up for about 400 of the children in foster care.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and when I talk about children in foster care, that means that these children were abused and neglected by the parents. And when CPS stepped in and started conducting the investigation, they found that, these parents failed to step up to protect the children, even though CPS was right there telling them, we've done an investigation and these children we have found are being abused and neglected. We need to work a plan to protect these children. Mm-hmm. And the parents failed to do that, and they did not want to do that, or they didn't believe that the children were being abused even though the evidence was right in front of them. And so they were removed from home because they needed to be safe and put in foster care. And I know I've mentioned this before, but a lot of the times we hear in the media that the children have been removed from an abused and neglected home, and now they're in foster care. And, you know, it doesn't end there. These children have been removed from everything and have suffered a tremendous loss in their life. And now they find themselves all alone in strangers' homes.
And a lot of times they have to switch schools too, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Schools,
so everything
new.
Changes for them. So you're their constant during this time.
Exactly. Ironically, the children in foster care have a lot of people that are in their lives, you know, the foster parents, the CPS worker, the adoption caseworker, doctors, teachers, but there really isn't one consistent person. You know, there's a lot of turnover with those people. Mm-hmm. Everybody has their own agenda. The CASA volunteer really is the only person that's there just for the child, to be a friend, to let the child vent any frustrations about the situation, because it's a very scary time for them. And it also gives the child an opportunity to step out of what they're going through, because our volunteers speak on behalf of the children in court, so they need to know the children to be able to advocate for their best interests. Mm-hmm. So our volunteers take the children out to the park, to the movies, to a basketball game. They give them an opportunity to be children, because during this time, it's very scary for these kids. They don't know what's going on from one day to the next. So to have somebody that's consistently there, that follows through with what they're going to say, and that just gives them an opportunity to be a kid, is really impactful in these children's lives.
Oh, absolutely. And they're all ages, right? From infants till...
From babies to 18.
Wow. So, I mean, that's crazy. I mean, all these poor kids.
And even babies, you know, some people may say, well, do the babies even really know what's going on? And surprisingly enough, you know, there's attachment needs from the day that children are born. Mm-hmm. And so there's an intuition, there's things that are building in their brains, development. And so it is really impactful even working with an infant because they have as many needs as a 12-year-old does.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So for one cost to volunteer, how many kids does one volunteer work with on a day-to-day basis?
It depends. Every case is different. Some cases have just one child. Some have a sibling group. Mm-hmm. And since we are in need of a large amount of volunteers, there's a lot of open cases. So
is it one volunteer per case?
It can be.
Or can you have more than one?
Depending on how many children there are mm-hmm. on the case. We have one case where there's 9 children and there's 3 CASA volunteers. We also have sometimes where spouses or friends want to be CASAs together, and so they can work on the same case.
Okay.
So it gives people an opportunity to feel like they've got a partner with what they're doing because there mm-hmm. is a lot of confidentiality. You're dealing with a lot of personal information, so you're not able to talk to anybody else who isn't on the case. So we do have a lot of instances where there are people who go through training together so that they can work together on a case.
Oh, that's good. That way husbands and wives can work together if they want to. And I know, Diana, you mentioned last time that it was 740 or so kids, and that was the equivalent to about 30 classrooms full of kids.
Yes, absolutely. And that's just an outrageous number. It's huge. That should mm-hmm. not be happening. And just the fact that it is happening, I mean, it should put us on high alert that these children are being abused and neglected by their caregivers, and we as a community need to step up and protect these children by taking action. And one way that an individual can do that is by becoming a CASA volunteer. Mm-hmm. Another way is getting educated on our CASA program. What are the qualifications of becoming a CASA volunteer? And it's pretty basic. It's an elite role to have. It really is. So you mm-hmm. need to be accepted into our program. But it's 21 years of age. They have to be 21 years of age or older, mm-hmm. pass an extensive background check. They have to complete 24 hours of classroom training, do a police ride-along, go do some court observation. Mm-hmm. So these volunteers that step into this role up front, we are asking for a lot of their time. But it's really critical that we do this, that we just don't put anybody in the role of caring for a child that has already suffered so much trauma.
Oh, yeah. It's just like you wouldn't go to a doctor if they didn't have any sort of education on it. So, I mean, there's obviously
makes
gotta
perfect
be,
sense.
Yeah,
yes.
There's got to be some, you know, education involved. And I'm sure our listeners understand that.
But. Yes. And, since we've been playing these PSAs with you guys, mm-hmm. we are just so thrilled. We've had many KCTA callers call our office and specifically say, hi, I've been listening to KCTA and I heard about the urgent need for volunteers, or it's an emergency. I want to help somehow. And it's just amazing. So, a big thank you to all your listeners.
Oh, we do have some of the best listeners in the world. I like to think so.
Yes, we do.
So you gave me some of the requirements to be a CASA, but what can our CASA volunteers expect to see in the community? I mean, what are some of the types of things that they might deal with on a day-to-day basis? What kind of cases? I mean, can you give them any sort of insight into what it would be like?
What they do is they take on the role of what you would call a casework supervisor or a CPS worker.
Mm-hmm.
They will look at the documents that are given to them by their supervisors, the affidavit of what happened with the children, why the children were taken, at what time were the children taken. What led up to the children being taken from their home? Was it alcohol and drugs? Were they involved? Was there spousal abuse? Whatever might have happened to the children, then they read about that. And they also get historical information and background information on the family, information on some of the relatives, what have been the dynamics in that family. So they do quite a bit of reading up front, and they go to the CPS caseworker and they speak with them on what they have seen transform in that particular case that they are working on. Once they do that, they meet with their supervisor and they will discuss what steps they need to take next. Do they need to go visit the children in school? How are the children doing in school? Who is the teacher? Let's go talk to the teacher. What medical needs do they have? Let's go talk to the doctor. And let's go visit the foster home. And let's make sure that the foster home that they're in right now is providing them their basic needs. And then, of course, nourishing the children and looking out for their best interests. So our CASA volunteers are all over the place, looking into everything and anybody that child has dealt with in the past, and also speaking to anybody that they are currently dealing with, or where they are placed, or what school they're going to. They look into everything to be able to go before the judge and make a recommendation of what needs to happen to the children next.
Oh, wow. And as Diana was saying, this is a very extensive, involved volunteer role. However, we are a volunteer-driven organization, so our staff supports our volunteers fully. When a volunteer goes through a program, goes through a training, and is accepted as a CASA advocate, they're assigned to a supervisor. So mm-hmm. they have somebody who's there that they can talk to throughout this process. We don't just give them a case and say good luck.
Oh, yeah.
There's a supervisor who has a lot of experience, is working with different volunteers, but it's an appropriate caseload per supervisor, so they have an adequate amount of time to be able to attend to the different volunteers that they're working with. They can be as involved as the volunteers want them to be. They can go on home visits with them. They can go to different doctor visits with them. It's really the comfort level of the volunteer. But you'll see a lot when people get a case, they may be a little timid, just because especially if somebody doesn't have any experience in the courtroom or in an investigative kind of role, because mm-hmm. that's what you're doing. You're talking to everybody who's involved in the child's life and putting the pieces together in one big picture for the judge to make a decision. But we see a lot with our volunteers, once they take a case and they kind of start working it, they get really passionate about wanting to make a difference, and they see how everything can kind of come together. Mm-hmm. And so our volunteers are amazing. We've got some that are working multiple cases, and it's just because some of them have the time and some of them make the time, because you can really have such a huge impact in what some would say is by doing simple things, but it comes down to making the time for these children. Mm-hmm. Because that's what they need. They need somebody who's going to push them through the system quicker and finding a permanent, loving, safe home. Mm-hmm. Because something that the community doesn't realize is how much it costs taxpayers for having children in foster care. And also having a CASA advocate as a guardian ad litem for foster children takes the place of having an attorney in that role. So that's also saving taxpayers money, because it doesn't cost anything for a CASA volunteer, whereas it would for an attorney. Mm-hmm. So it's having a CASA advocate serves many roles for our children as well as the community.
Samantha, I know we're running a little low on time, but you mentioned that there's going to be a toy drive coming up. Can you tell our listeners more about that and how they can help with that?
Yes. We have partnered with Sames Ford, and we're going to have a Christmas drive there at their lot along Henry Ford Road. It's going to be Saturday, December 19th. It's a one-day toy drive, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and we're going to be collecting toys for our infants to our teenagers. So we're asking people to come by, drop off a toy. We'll have Santa there. We'll have some nice thank you gifts as a way to show our appreciation and a continuous reminder of the good that people mm-hmm. are doing for our kids in foster care.
Oh yeah, because some of these kids, they don't get their own presents. They, you know, they're using hand-me-downs a lot of times, and so this is kind of a way to make them feel special this Christmas. And
absolutely.
Our listeners totally need to get on board with this. So yes. I hope you all go buy a present, go whatever you have, just go donate it on December 19th.
Yes, and if you have any questions, please feel free to call our office at 884-2272. You can ask for Samantha, you can ask for Diana, or you can go on our website at coastalbendcasa.org, and we'd be more than happy to, you know, give you a name of a child and age if they want to be specific and donate to a specific child.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you so much, ladies, for coming.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all. You've been listening to KCTA's Community Spotlight. If there's an organization you'd like to spotlight, send me an email at kctapsa@yahoo.com.